Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. And by the Tennessee Republican Assembly, a socially, morally, and fiscally conservative group of individuals committed to upholding the traditional Republican ideals that represent the American founders' original intent. We believe in God, family, and country. We believe in principles over politics. The TRA is the only rhino-free Republican organization in Tennessee. Visit our website at tnra.org. That's tnra.org. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Thank you for being with us tonight. We've got a couple good guests lined up. We have Jan Black from Stewart County, who will be with us a little later on in the show. He is running in the 7th District for County Commission. And Jan, I know him pretty well, and he's basically running to restore some integrity to the fiscal, some integrity and sanity to the fiscal process here in Stewart County. And a little later on, we'll have Jody Harden. She is running for the SEC in District 25. And got a little more information for you on Jody. Pop this back up here. And I had that ready. Here we go. She's in favor of the sovereignty of state government, citizens' right to bear arms, and unborn children's right to life. She's worked the past 4 years in state government, has learned, among other things, that it's where she belongs. In fact, she believes she is called to be there. Go ahead and quote her here. I feel great responsibility to our children to help direct government with their future in mind, to live with our choices, good or bad. We're responsible not only to a present population of adults, but to generations to come. They can't be taken lightly or ignored altogether in favor of immediate self-interest. Amen. Even though being on the executive committee is not a paid position, I want to help build a foundation for success for the Republican Party on the state and local level. I have lived in Middle Tennessee for 14 years now. I come, like a lot of people, to make a career in music, loved everything about the area, and stayed, never wanted to leave. She has two children, Fonya, 9, and Nathan, 6. They attend the Cross Point Church in Dixon, and she will be with us a little bit later. And as I said, so will Jan Black. We'll probably have Kyle Mallory may join us here in a few minutes. He's also one of the few conservative teachers probably in the state, certainly one of the few conservative teachers here in Stewart County, and he's a GOP chair, and he's also in our Tea Party, and he's going to talk about the retention elections that you may have heard something about. Apparently the governor and lieutenant governor, even though they're both pushing the same constitutional amendment to basically legalize what they've been doing illegally all these years, I guess they don't agree with actually using the retention process for the upcoming election to get rid of some liberal judges. So Kyle will hopefully join us here in a few minutes and talk about that. Memorial Day is coming up. And matter of fact, here recently in Stewart County, we had Eagle Fest, which is celebration of, you know, we recognize our veterans, and it's kind of like an early celebration of Memorial Day. Unless you've been living under a rock, you've heard about the VA scandal. The VA apparently has been falsifying records to disguise the lengthy waiting times of many veterans. And while these waits were so long that we actually had veterans die waiting for care. And that's just disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful. And, you know, Veterans Day is this coming weekend, and we need to remember those families and our prayers, and just – that's got to be fixed. And, you know, apparently in 2008, before Obama took over, he was briefed by the outgoing administration that there were problems. So the problems, they didn't start with Obama. It started under the Bush administration and have only gotten worse. Now we have people dying, waiting for care, veterans waiting for care. But, oh, by the way, what's the little freak's name that recently had a sex child? Bradley Manning, Mr. WikiLeaks himself. I guess the Army fast-forwarded his application for sex change because that guy has, you know, the Army has already paid for, the government, meaning me and you, our taxpayer dollars, went to fund this guy's sex change operation while we got veterans, honorable veterans, waiting for care, dying waiting for care. And that's just one more disgraceful thing. I'll tell you what, our government has a history of betraying our veterans. You know, there's a lot of similarities. Not everything is similar, but there are some similarities to what's gone on in Iraq and what's gone on in Afghanistan and with what went on in Vietnam. Both were long drawn out, a lot of casualties. We didn't have as many KIAs in Afghanistan and Iraq, and that's mostly due to medical technology and the availability of aircraft. But we have a lot of amputees. We have a lot of people seriously amputated. You know, there's people, multiple amputees, traumatic brain injuries, PTSD, a lot of problems, not as many KIAs, but a lot of those had, if they had, the technology at in the Vietnam era, the injuries that some of these guys had, they would not have survived. And of course, Vietnam, we lost over 50,000. And in both cases, long drawn out conflicts, our soldiers, our service, our military upheld their oath to the Constitution, and they did their part. And the government used them up and pulled them out when they decided, well, you know, this is just not politically feasible to maintain this anymore. We're just going to pull out. You know, never mind you've had thousands killed, thousands maimed, the families are devastated, and they just pull out. I mean, we've pretty much pulled out of Iraq before we did. Helped institute Sharia law, and I'm sure that once we pull out of Afghanistan, it'll just go back to the Taliban. The Taliban will just have some new toys to go and terrorize people with. So it's disgraceful the way our government treats our veterans, and, you know, the VA is just one more example. But, you know, something else that really bothers me on a daily basis is, you know, it's really a daily betrayal, and it has been a daily betrayal here in America ever since we got involved in this, ever since 9/11, you know, we had to fight back. And I certainly did not disagree with going into Afghanistan, going to Iraq, and, you know, no disagreements with going there, but, you know, you go in and get your job done, you kill the bad guys, and you come home. And in the meantime, you don't leave your country vulnerable. Neither Bush nor Obama had the decency while they were sending these guys overseas to fight and die and lose limbs and be away from their families, had the decency to close the border, secure our border. It's been wide open. Bush did at least acknowledge radical Islam, although anybody that knows anything about it knows that it's all radical. But at least he at least accepted that there were some people that were motivated by the ideology. Current administration doesn't even want to say that. Matter of fact, they've expunged that from all the military manuals, from all the federal law enforcement manuals, and you won't hear the term radical Islam. You're not even allowed to attribute terrorism, Islamic terrorism, terrorist. It's insane, absolutely insane. And while our guys are over there fighting and dying and risking it all, and their families are worried about them, and in some cases devastated when they lose them, we're promoting this within our government. You got Muslim Brotherhood at DHS, federal and state. You've got them in the FBI. You got them in every level. And so that's a betrayal. So this Memorial Day, remember the veterans, thank the veterans, but make it more. Make a pledge to fight for the veterans not just for the medical needs that they certainly have and are entitled to, but to stop the betrayal. You know, if a politician does not understand the threat of Islam, and if they don't see it here, and if they don't see how they're betrayed, if they don't have enough sense to see that, they don't deserve your vote. And if they won't do something about the betrayal, they don't deserve your vote. So make Memorial Day more than a day, a somber day of remembering their sacrifices. It should be that, of course, but it needs to be more. It needs to be, let's do something, let's end the betrayal, because it is ultimately a betrayal. And they're giving away our country. Right now you've got the GOP and the Democrats. They're all on board with amnesty. So our guys are fighting and dying, and they're going to give our country away. Well, we still got people in Afghanistan. That's just, that is the ultimate betrayal. I got Kurt on the line here. We'll go ahead and bring him in. Kurt, you have a question or comment?
Oh, hey, Dave. Excuse me there. Well, I heard you say Kyle's coming in there. How much time do we have?
We got a few. I've got to take a. I got to do a read here in a minute, a live read, and then Kyle will be coming in about 20 after, 25 after, thereabouts.
Okay. Well, okay. I can start on this, and I can give you an overview, and then we might wind up finishing it up some of the time. That's entirely up to you. But my mind, in thinking about today, my mind's on the subject of language. It has been for a while now. I wrote a column for the local paper, which ran the last two Fridays in the PI. And
that's the Paris Intelligencer, right?
Pardon?
The Paris Intelligencer, for those who may not be from Paris.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Paris Post Intelligencer. And they've gone to a situation that I don't care for now. You have to have an online subscription to you. Well, you can log into ParisPI.net. You can get five visits a month or something like that. I'm not sure. But anyway, that's another ball game. And my mind got hung up on this language thing. And what I talked about in that column was mostly words and phrases. This is the stuff that you hear that gets used incorrectly all the time. Well, today I took it a step further. Instead of just thinking about words and phrases, I went to covering entire concepts of faulty language, for lack of a better terminology, that we hear and see daily at work. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples here.
Kurt, before you get started with the first one, Let me go ahead and get this in, and then we'll turn it right back to you.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineers' insight and love of America to American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Kurt Blackwood. And Kurt, before I so rudely interrupted you there, you were going to talk about the column that you're currently working on. Back to you.
No, the column is already written and published, but this is, I guess, an extension of that, where I went in, instead of just using words and phrases, I've gone into entire concepts. And I'll give you an example of it. This is, we're told frequently, regularly, pay attention here, don't judge all Muslims by the actions of a few lunatics. And then, in the same breath almost, we can be told to judge all gun owners by the actions of a few lunatics. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Of course it does. Yeah. It's a double standard at work, but that's my label for it, is a concept of using inverted or reverse or upside down language, you know, whatever you want to call it. And they do this to play on our emotions. And it causes so many people to behave and think emotionally instead of thinking logically. People, disengage your emotions on this stuff. When you hear these leftist rants and see it in print, they're applying this kind of stuff to what's going on around the world. Apply logic to it. The left has learned to predict what you, the public's emotional response will be. And they work constantly to find and exploit things that will play on your emotions and keep you off balance. It's a game to them. One of the greatest scenes in that area was something, and this was indeed a tragedy that happened in Newtown, the school shooting where so many children were killed. But here again, it was played on emotions. Think about it logically, folks. It's not the gun's fault. It's a people problem. But very few, if any, work at fixing the people problem. Instead, they want to outlaw guns. That's not going to solve anything.
Yeah.
We
have a broken judicial system. We have a broken judicial system. We have for years. We do the catch and release even with violent criminals. And so when things like that happen, and it's certainly tragic, but you could say it's predictable. When you let crazy people out, you let people who have a record. Those things happen, and the left creates the mess, and then they try to act like they're going to be the savior of the mess they created. Of course, all politicians do that to some degree, but I think the left is, I don't know if I should say worse at or if I should say they've mastered it more than the GOP has.
Mm-hmm. Well, they started first.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's the other example that I used it later in my write-up here, but I'll go ahead and toss this out to you, and we'll go back and cover as much of this as we have time before Kyle comes on. This, I call this another language goodie. This is what we get told repeatedly. Now hang with me here, pay attention. Social Security is going to run out of money. Yes, it will, eventually. Eventually, everything, if the numbers keep going up, the numbers of the people dependent on social programs continue to rise and the GDP continues to drop, yes, it will eventually run out of money. But let's go back and look at this as they present it. It's just, here you go, folks. It's, Social Security's going to run out of money. How come we never hear that welfare programs are going to run out of money?
Food stamp program. Exactly.
Yeah, think about that.
Exactly.
And there's more than one different, there's more than one form of welfare. We think in terms of American welfare for all the programs here in the continental United States. But we have worldwide welfare, which is all this so-called foreign aid that we send to each other country. You do not hear them talk about running out of money for those programs.
No, I don't think they've cut any of them. They may have cut them to Christian nations, but they've increased them to Muslim nations.
How about all the tanks and the F whatever they were, F-18s or whatever that they sent to Egypt, very possibly are being used against us as we speak. But that's the double standard at work.
Oh yeah.
I had a discussion, and there are a lot of supposedly smart supposed to be practicing Christian, conservative value people that fall into this trap. I had a discussion one Sunday morning in our Sunday school class. We got talking about the arms thing. This, I don't remember what the occasion was, but they were talking about a man who I know really well. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it had something to do with a multi-route magazine for a particular weapon. And this fellow just, his hair almost stood up on the end, it seemed, and the expression on his face, I don't remember. He looked at me and he said, "You don't need a gun that can shoot 30 times." Well, it's not a matter of what I need, first of all. It's a matter of what I want. He might change his tune if at some type of event it was invaded, as it has been happened many times, by an armed terrorist, and I happen to be the guy sitting there with the weapon that would shoot 30 times. He might be glad I had it. But, you know, I don't try to convince people like that. But what I'm thinking here on this guy, you know, if this man who is supposedly a conservative and a Christian, if he would be as emotional and as verbal about the liberal media projecting on the wall in big block letters the stuff that they do to stir the emotions of people and keep them off balance, if he would be as engaged in the issues of the stuff that is being taught to probably his own grandkids, you know, in the public school system,
yeah,
if he would use some of that in his own thinking for a more constructive issue, what difference might it make? I mean, how do you get through to these people? Really, I'm serious. How do you get through?
I don't know. I think we've all been trying to figure that one out for a while. We don't understand how people who are otherwise intelligent can't see some obvious things. But, you know, we've had liberal education in school for a long time now. You have to go way back. I mean, even I look back now, and even when I went to school, which was not all that long ago, you know, things were already going down the wrong path, and they were going down the wrong path well before then. So, you know, the left has had control of the education for the last 100-plus years, and they've used it to their advantage. So, well, we've got Kyle on the line here. I'm going to pop him in real quick, and I think he's got something on the retention races. How you doing tonight, Kyle?
How you doing? Well, I appreciate you having me on again tonight, Dave.
Well, I'm glad to have
you.
Can we talk a little bit about the retention issue?
Yeah, there's statewide on the ballot, statewide ballot on retention. Hello.
Okay, you there?
on retention of three Supreme Court justices. And this is a huge vote, and I'm not sure why it hasn't been publicized as much, but this is about control of the Tennessee Supreme Court, and more importantly, who our Attorney General is. And currently right now, our Attorney General is Bob Cooper, who I guess is the biggest thing he's done is he refused to help out other states in the fight against Obamacare. And my concern here, and he's done a lot of things wrong. I mean, I could talk for hours about his far-left liberal record, but I think that's the one issue that all conservatives and Republicans can agree on is that Bob Cooper is bad. Bob Cooper supports Obamacare with his actions in the past, and the way to get Bob Cooper gone is vote no on retaining these three Supreme Court justices.
Ballot. Can you explain that to some of the people out there that might not understand why voting no to retain these judges can help us get rid of Bob Cooker. Some people might not quite understand that.
Okay. There are five members on the Supreme Court, and three of them are up for retention. If these three go, then they will be replaced by Governor Haslam. Now I know where a lot of your viewers are going. Well, even Governor Haslam, we have our issues, but at least there will be Republican appointments. And
I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm
know where you're going. Go ahead. I know where this is going, but go ahead.
I guess I don't have any faith that a Republican appointed to the Supreme Court by Bill Haslam would be any better than a judge that's currently on there. I mean, I just have no faith whatsoever. I mean, do you know something that I...
Even Governor Haslam has had his issues with Bob Cooper, okay. Especially with the Obamacare issue. I mean, yes, Governor Haslam is a moderate and everything, and a Republican, and Rhino, all those things. Yeah, he's done a lot of things, but still... even an appointment by Governor Haslam would be much better than these far, far, far left judges. So on a scale of 1 to 10, so Haslam's even a 4. We'll give you that, but as far as conservatism being a 10. But these liberal judges are 1s and 2s on the leftness, so... And they're not gonna. And Governor Haslam. I mean, this is what this is about. This is Bob Cooper. And again, if these three don't do what they are supposed to do, we can kick them out too. Maybe even Haslam.
Okay, now how long
one
is,
out of them.
Go ahead. How long is their term? How long is their term?
I believe it's the retention vote. I think it's every 4 or 8 years, but that's wrong too. It's either 4 or 8. I'm not for sure. I'd have to look that up.
So if we did, okay, if you got what you wanted and we removed these three and then Haslam appointed three, let's say three decent ones. Okay. Yes. Is it automatic that they will then pick somebody else to be Attorney General? Is that something that happens automatically after an election?
There has to be Bob Cooper gets his he's in an appointed position too. And if your Supreme Court said, no, we don't like Bob Cooper anymore, which we would assume, and I know this is a big assumption considering Governor Haslam's record on appointments, but with the pressure that's mounted on this, I'm pretty sure that there would be a new Attorney General.
Okay, but the Supreme Court has two Attorney General, though, correct?
That's correct.
So the governor appoints the Supreme Court justices, and then they do the retention elections, which is unconstitutional, but that's the way they've been doing it.
That's an excellent point, Dave. That this whole system is a bad system to begin with, but that's not what this fight is about. We understand this. Most conservatives understand this is a bad system that we're in.
Right.
Nonetheless, it's what we got, and it's what we got to work with. So let's play the game that we've got, and then hopefully we can change the rules on the other on the constitutional amendment later on.
That's going to be up on the ballot. Yeah, that'll be on the ballot this November as well. Just when you think you've heard everything, those leftists in D.C. pull something else. They're going to keep doing it until we, the people, run them out of town on a rail. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food and who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn your world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from the emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear you need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. All right, we're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No. Not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Call in if you want to join the conversation. Before the break, we were talking with Kyle Mallory. We were talking about retention of Supreme Court justices in this upcoming election, not to be confused with the constitutional amendment to change the process. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. Kyle, what can you tell me about the current Supreme Court justices? I mean, what? Give us some examples of why they need to go.
Well, one of the things, there's some question. There was a one of the, I believe it was Chief Justice was talking. He was not in favor of the death penalty. He said that those that are in favor of the death penalty are going back to the Bible and eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. So we were criticized for our Chief Justice for believing in the Bible. That would be, if that's pretty bad right there. That's enough for me. But the bottom line, these are three liberal Democrat appointees by Governor Bredesen. And the other side is saying, well, I don't want our judicial system to be politicized. Our judicial system already is politicized, way prior to this. That's one issue.
Let me say something on that a minute. I've heard that argument, and I hear it from people who I have a lot of respect for, and we agree with each other on a lot of things. And they're like, I just don't want to say. I'm like, wait a minute. Right now they have carte blanche, and who is more important? Is it more important? Because remember now, the power is supposed to be invested in the legislature, okay? It's not the courts that are supposed to be the all-powerful branch of our government. They're supposed to interpret law. Legislators make law. Well, if we can politicize the people who are going to make law, why is politicizing the judicial process any worse? I mean, I just don't see it. And you have to have a way to get rid of them.
Well, and here we go. I mean, here's a good shot at getting rid of three liberal judges. And here's another thought process. You know, Tennessee, we ought to be, the people of Tennessee are hard red. But yet, we're okay. Our legislative branch is pretty red. Okay. There are some issues with our legislative branch.
Yeah.
a good decent red, not as red as we need it to be. Obviously, our executive branch has some significant issues, but
it's
our
pink.
Judicial branch...
Our executive branch is pink, bottom line.
I wouldn't even give it pink, but okay. But our judicial branch, well, I might give it a... Never mind, I won't go what type of pink it is, but anyway.
Okay.
but our judicial branch is blue. Right now, in Tennessee.
Do you happen to know if the judge is this the same Supreme Court justice that made the ruling back in 2000 that said that the abortion laws, that the Constitution of Tennessee guarantees abortion, that even if Roe v. Wade were overturned, that women in Tennessee would still have a fundamental right to abortion? Do you know if any of these justices are? Are they one of the three that said that, do you know?
I'm not for sure on that that issue either. There's a lot of things I'm not sure on their actual voting record. I hadn't got into that yet. But I do know the key point is that these are three liberal justices appointed by Governor Bredesen. And they control the Bob Cooper and his employment. And, Bob, you know, I understand the Tea Party and the constitutionalists who are targeting, you know, Lamar and some of the Republican rhinos. I get that. But this Bob Cooper is far worse. I mean, he should be target number one. And we have a good opportunity to kick Bob Cooper out of a job. And all we got to do is vote no.
Yeah.
Now, we'll say this, is these judges have started raising money, significant amount of money. I was looking at a newspaper article today, and they've got well over $200,000 in money raised at this point in time.
Well, wait a minute. Now, I thought you said they were against politicizing the process.
Again, I'm pointing out a huge fact there. They raised over $200,000. No, which in fundraising, the Chief Justice, I think, was around 100, well over 150, with the other two. And that doesn't even include the special interest money that's happening, and that even doesn't even include this an upcoming fundraiser by that they're organizing by the trial attorneys to defend
right.
them, to help defend them. And we know what trial attorneys are. If you got a major trial attorney group about to raise money for somebody, you probably know that they're a liberal.
Yeah, yeah. And pretty good odds. Pretty good odds.
Besides the other things that they've done, I can come back in a couple of weeks with more on their record, on their voting record, and everything. But bottom line, these are liberals. Bob Cooper's a liberal. We got an opportunity right now to get rid of a powerful liberal in our judicial. Well, actually, really, one, two, three, four liberals, three Supreme Court justices, along with our Attorney General.
Yeah.
And one vote.
Okay. And, you know, the thing is, these retention votes, I don't know if most people even bother to check a block on that, because most of them probably have never heard of the guy, don't know anything about him, and I don't know if people tend to just leave it blank or if they tend to say, well, I hadn't heard anything bad, so they, you know, check the block to keep him, or well, I know the judiciary is messed up, and do they normally, you know, I don't know how that pans out, but information on these justices, I think, is key, getting that out to the people so that when they go in there, they know something about them. And I think that's going to be key rather than we're going to have just a little bit more than I think to be successful than just, well, they were Bredesen Bredesen appointees and they're liberal. Let's put some bad decisions that they've made and publicize those. I think that would go a long way to getting rid of these guys. And it's kind of funny here, too, because Haslam and Ramsey both want to continue to use this retention system, as they call it, the Tennessee plan, which is contrary to the current Constitution, and both of them support the amendment, I think it's Amendment 2, that basically, with a few tweaks here and there, keeps the current unconstitutional system. It would make the current unconstitutional system a constitutional system, okay, if it's passed this November. I would like to see it go back to, you know, what the Constitution says, which is the people elect the judges. But I guess Ramsey is like, well, hey, let's publicize this. Let's use this as a way to show that the system works. And Haslam is afraid it'll draw too much negative press. I don't know if you follow that any.
Yeah, I have a little bit. And I don't want to speak for Ramsey by any means, but here's what I think that that's probably part of his mindset, or at least somebody saying what he's saying that is a conservative is probably thinking is that. But now he is the one that's brought this issue up. Ramsey is the person who did bring this issue to the forefront about our system being unconstitutional, and that's fact. Now, the fix we make and disagree with, which I do, but he's the one that brought this up to the front. He basically said this was 4 or 5 years ago. This system we're working under is unconstitutional. We need to follow the law. And
yeah.
And he basically, what he's done, said, all right, here's a way we can actually follow the law, make this plan that we're doing constitutional. And
right.
And thus we have that amendment. I'm going to vote no on it, but nonetheless, there we go.
Yeah. Well, okay. You definitely get the word out about it.
Here's another thing that you bring up is that, and this makes no sense. Well, it does, but it makes no sense to me. In one way, is that Haslam's not getting involved with this particular retention vote, and I mean, if everybody votes no on this, he gets to appoint 3 new judges. Why would he not want that? Doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in his selections, but I guess we'll have to wait and see how it all pans out. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Kyle, anything else you want to talk about in terms of the judicial retention elections or the amendments?
No, but I will mention one other thing very quickly, is that there are a lot of judicial races out there this time, and I don't think we can fully take over the judicial branch and make it solid red, but at least we can make a little more red, at least add a little red into it in this election. So, Dave, appreciate you having me on, and I'll come back with the goods on these judges.
And a reminder for you and the folks out there that from Stewart County that might be listening. As a matter of fact, if you're in Cheatham County, Dixon County, and help me out, Kyle, the other counties that Susan Lockhart Nash is running for circuit court in.
College conservative.
Okay. And, yes, she seems like a good woman, everything I know about her. And she will be at the Stewart County Tea Party meeting this Thursday, 6:30 p.m. at the Stewart County Visitor Center. So, you know, hope to see you there if you're in one of those counties. We're going to let her speak and kind of, you know, judges are limited on what they can say. They can't go into the same kind of mode that other politicians do, but you can ask her at least some questions and get some idea of her level of experience. So that's this Thursday, 6:30 p.m.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate you. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes on Inside Tennessee.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wives Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Call in if you have a question or a comment. And so what's your thoughts on the whole retention thing there, Kurt?
I have a friend of mine who used to be a very accomplished musician who's no longer with us. When I first heard his theory on politics, I thought it was a little brash. But I've come to completely subscribe to the David Clendenin theory. It is that if they're in, vote them out.
Well, you know,
at this stage of the game, I'm pretty much serious. There's a few, and we know who they are. That's the thing about it. The ones that are worth keeping are easily identifiable. We pretty
right.
much know who they are. Maybe not so. Now, I'm speaking of legislators now when I say that. I think that judges are not as easily tracked as our legislators. I mean, it takes a lot of digging and a lot of work to unearth a judge's record on how he...
Yeah.
You know, you got to go back and look case by case by case what decisions he handed down. Whereas with the legislator, you got to all you got to do is look at his voting record.
Yeah. And you know, it is hard. And my guess is that most people, unless they just happen to be involved in the judicial system, or they're a lawyer, or you know, maybe if they're involved in law enforcement and they have to go to these different trials, they don't have a clue about the judges out there, you know, whether they're, you know, hardcore conservatives, you know, letter of the law types, or if they're, you know, there just to, if they seem to be there just to undermine the law, like a lot of those that we read about. And the average person doesn't know, and they don't have the access to know, like we do with our politicians. But we do know that the judiciary is another area where the liberals have taken over. They took over a long time ago. And even though Tennessee's a red state, we know we've got some left-wing judges out there, no shortage of them. But I do hope that we can get the word out about these judges that are up for retention election here. And that's in November, so we still got some time here to get the word out about them. And you know, hopefully somebody can do the research for us and get the word out about these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your thought about, I think I know where you're at, but personally, I think we should just have direct elections like the Constitution calls for. I don't think we can do any worse electing judges than we do electing or the people who write the laws. What's your thought on that?
Elect them is my thought on it. Anytime you have an appointment of that nature, of that stature, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but you open the door for corruption. There are things going on, I believe, with these judicial races that maybe you and I don't know about. right now. That's what I think. Maybe you do. I know, but I don't. I'm looking at races that I see regular in this area. Okay, look, I'm looking at the amount of money being spent on that race. And when I look and find out how much money that job, what the salary for that job is, the math doesn't work. Why a candidate would spend that much money?
What are you talking about, the Supreme Court, or are you talking about local Senate races?
No, I'm talking about local races, okay? I figure that the higher up the ladder you go, the higher the expectation goes, the more opportunity, the more likely you are to have some potential for bribery, if you want to use that harsh word, and I think it's necessary at this stage of the game. I think the more likely you are to have it, because the more power that judge wields, the more influential people will be approaching him to make the right decision or decisions in their favor, I guess is the way to put it.
Right. And you know,
that makes sense to you?
Yeah, and well, here's the thing. The people that say, well, we don't want to politicize the judiciary and you know, we don't want people buying the – okay, well, wait a minute. If they're appointed and or they do the retention elections now, there's nothing keeping them from being bribed. I mean, they're either honest people or they're not honest people.
Of course not.
And as we know, most of them are already liberal because that's what the law schools, for generally speaking, have not taught the Constitution in years. The constitutional law now is – that means case law, meaning, well, we don't really look at the original intent of the Constitution. We look at what the most recent Supreme Court decision is on this topic, and we make everything match that decision, whether that decision was grounded in the Constitution or not. So I think it would be a good thing. I also think we should have never put them on the pedestal. I don't see where as judges should be on a higher pedestal than legislators. The people that interpret the law should not be on a higher pedestal than those who actually make the law. And I think it's something that we need to get away from. If somebody does something wrong, whether they're a judge or a legislator, we can find out and hold them accountable. I think that's the way it is, and there'll be money involved in terms of elections, but we've already got money involved in terms of the elections for the people who make the laws, so I don't see a problem.
Well, you spoke about the possibility of bribery. The only person that can keep a bribe from happening definitely is the person that's wearing the robe.
Right.
If they refuse to accept it, then they won't be bribed.
You mentioned the salaries. You mentioned the salaries a minute ago. You were talking for circuit court judges? Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, circuit court judges, district attorney, et cetera, et cetera. Chancellor.
What kind of salaries are we looking at for those positions?
You know, Dave, I looked at it, but I have forgotten. I've got a good memory. It's not very long.
It's good, but you got to use it fast.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of like ice cream. You better use it quick.
Right. Okay. Well, I know that there's been more emphasis placed on those races, it seems like, than what there has been in the past. And I think that, it would be good if there was more interest and more people digging into, okay, what's this guy's record? What power does this guy yield? Why it matters? I think that is something that should happen, and that's important, because a lot of the things that, you know, for instance, now granted this is on a different scale, this is federal judges, but, you know, I just saw where another federal judge basically
overruled a, I think it was Oregon's ban on same-sex marriage. You know, and that's already happened in Kentucky. And, of course, the Tennessee Marriage Protection Act is worded just like Kentucky's. And, in fact, I think we're in limbo on Tennessee, in Tennessee on that issue to some degree. But we've got judges that they just get away with interpretations that are not based on the Constitution, whether you're talking the federal Constitution or the state Constitution, and nobody holds them accountable. And so many of the things that the left has accomplished, they've accomplished through the courts, and they've accomplished it by distorting the laws, in many cases ignoring the Constitution. And I don't think they were ever meant to have that kind of power. I don't hold the judiciary in very high regard. I really don't. I see them as rogues in robes, and there's just way too many of them like that. Do you know anything, how the race with Matt Stowe, is that, what, the 23rd Judicial District, or 24th? 24th,
yes,
I believe. 24th. How is that race going?
The question, do I know anything, yes and no. I just was privy to a conversation just this evening. I went to a meet and greet for one of the judicial candidates over here in this area, Vicki Hoover, who is running for circuit court judge against Donald Parrish. And Matt was there, and I found out that he had spent the day with here in Henry County with a fellow who I know fairly well. He's a retired businessman. I'm not going to call his name. But I know he knows a lot of people. He swings a pretty good stick. And he spent the major portion of the day, I believe he said 6 hours, he and Matt were out touring around Henry County, visiting people and having little meet and greets in restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. And then when Matt came in, the first thing he told me, he said, "Hey, I've had a great day over here." And of course, this is the sitting DA's home county, of course. And we expect it to be the toughest county for Matt to take, but I've encountered a lot of I've had one-on-one conversations with a lot of people in the county that, frankly, their responses have surprised me. Just, I'll be honest about it. I found people that had things to say about the hometown boy that I really didn't expect them to say. I knew they should if they were factual, you know, if they were honest.
Yeah.
That they were, you know, but I didn't expect them to be that way. Now, how many of them there are, we won't know until November, I guess.
Yeah, I just got a text from Kyle, and it said that 8 years the judges, the Supreme Court judges, hold their positions for 8 years. So every 8 years they have a retention election. Currently, that's a long time, a very long time. We've got about a minute or so before the break, and hopefully on the other side of the hour we'll have on the other side of the break we'll have Jan Black with us. He's running for county commissioner of the 7th district here in Stewart County. And as I said before, he's here to restore some integrity and some sanity to the fiscal policies of this county. And, you know, county commission races are important as well. And our county governments, you know, they like a lot of counties, the county here is, you know, there's a lot of federal grants involved and things that they jump on, so-called free money. But, you know, they don't always follow the rules. A lot of times you talk to a county commissioner and you'll ask them, well, why do you have to do this? Or, well, state law, you know, we don't have a choice. We've got to do it. Like the jail here. Well, we got to build a new jail. We have to borrow money to build a new jail because the state said if we don't, they're going to shut our jail down. All right. Well, they're also supposed to follow the open meeting laws. And that's something they haven't been doing here. And we've got a little petition here. And I'm going to read it real quick before the break, and then we'll talk with Jan about this some and also talk about his campaign.
And we've only got a few signatures on this, but we just started the other day. And this is Ouster, Stewart County Mayor and County Commissioners. The undersigned residents of Stewart County, Tennessee, request the assistance of the Attorney General of the State of Tennessee to institute proceedings in Ouster against the Stewart County Mayor and Stewart County Commissioners for knowingly and willfully neglecting to perform the duties enjoined upon them by the laws of the State of Tennessee. In that the Stewart County Mayor and the Stewart County Commissioners knowingly and willfully violated Tennessee Code Annotated 8-44-101-111 by holding secret committee meetings and failing to provide required public notice of meetings by the Mayor and Commissioners, Tennessee Code Annotated 5-8-507, by failing to post the Stewart County budget in a local newspaper prior to presenting it to the governing body for a vote, by knowingly and willfully neglecting to perform their duties and conducting meetings in secret, the mayor and commissioners have denied the residents of Stewart County the rights guaranteed under the Constitution of the State of Tennessee and those granted by the legislature. So sometimes you have to take extreme measures. We will see how that turns out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For the Talk Radio News Service, I'm Keely Sullivan. House Speaker John Boehner said today he will consider holding a vote on the Enlist Act, a piece of legislation that would allow undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. before they were 15 to apply for citizenship after completing military service. The act, however, will not be included as an amendment during an upcoming vote on a comprehensive defense spending package. Switzerland-based Credit Suisse AG pled guilty and was fined $2.6 billion for conspiring to help Americans escape federal taxation by filing false income tax returns and other documents with the Internal Revenue Service. It was the highest ever payment in a criminal tax case. The Federal Communications Commission said Sprint Corp. will pay $7.5 million to resolve allegations that the company failed to honor consumer requests to opt out of phone and text marketing communications. It is the largest settlement ever under the Do Not Call law. Talk Radio News Service, Keely Sullivan, Washington.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're waiting for our next guest to join us, Jan Black. As I mentioned before the break, the Stewart County mayors and commissioners have violated some state laws here in terms of open meetings and posting certain things that have to be posted. And we do have a petition going around. And actually, Jan wrote the letter back in, I think, February, and there was a response from the Attorney General and it sent to the finance chair of the Finance Committee and basically laying out, hey, here are the rules that you have to go by, and it appears that you haven't. And this goes for budget committee meetings, the shows for any meeting. They can't just meet in secret, and they can't discuss things when they haven't announced a meeting and when they're not in an official meeting capacity. They can't just hash it all out on the phone as they seem to be inclined to do. So hopefully Jan will join us here in a minute. Looks like we might be having an issue here on this one line. Okay. Anyhow, there's some other things here that you might want to think about. You know, and Lincoln County is doing this right now, and we've had the guy on who was heavily involved with it. His name's Daryl Luna. Probably have him back on again. But Tennessee's Constitution does allow a charter form of government. And it's, you know, you've heard it called Home Rule Charter, Constitutional Charter, different names. But basically, it says Home Rule in Tennessee is the power of a local county or city under the Tennessee Constitution to adopt its own charter, including its own system of self-government within limitations prescribed by the Tennessee Constitution and state statute. Article 7, Section 1 of the Tennessee Constitution provides that the General Assembly may provide alternate forms of county government, including the right to charter and the manner in which a referendum may be called. A county that adopts a charter under Article 7, Section 1 is commonly called a home charter. Turn the page here. Municipalities also have the authority to adopt home rule charters under Article 11, Section 9 of the Tennessee Constitution. Generally, the authority of such a Tennessee county to act in local affairs is transferred from the state legislature to the county home rule charter in significant legislative and administrative areas. The charter is adopted and, as needed, may be amended by the county voters by referendum. It replaces the previous form of county government after its adoption. Now, as you know, in Tennessee, there's various forms of county government. I don't know all of them. Don't fully understand the one my county uses, and I'm not sure that the elected officials fully understand it either, to be quite honest with you. As far as what's required to change the form of county government to a home rule charter, there are three steps required for a county to adopt a home rule charter. A charter commission must be created. The members of the commission must be selected or appointed. Voters must approve the change in form of government. Tennessee Code Annotated 5-1-204, that's 5-1-204, provides that the initial step in a charter form of county government shall be the creation of a charter commission. The commission may be created in four different ways. The charter commission may be created by the adoption of a charter resolution by the majority of the legislative body of a county. If you can convince your county government to do it, then that's one way. Under this process, the charter commission is to be elected from the same districts and in the same manner as the members of the county legislative body. No more than three members of the charter commission shall be elected from any one district. And we are having some technical issues here for some reason. Okay. Alternatively, the charter commission may be created by proclamation of the county mayor. The proclamation must identify and appoint the members of the Charter Commission and must be ratified by two-thirds of all members of the county legislative body. Members of the Charter Commission shall be appointed from the same districts as members of the county legislative body are elected. No more than three members of the Charter Commission shall be appointed from any one district. This method is limited in applicability and based on the population limits prescribed in Tennessee Code Annotated Section 5-1-204. I have no idea what those limits. And number three, a charter resolution created in a charter commission may be initiated by petition of registered voters equal to at least 10% of the total number of votes cast in the county for governor at the last preceding gubernatorial election. Under this process, the charter commission is to be elected from the same districts and in the same manner as the members of the county legislative body. No more than three members of the charter commission shall be elected from any one district. In addition to the three methods outlined above, a charter commission may be created by a private act of the General Assembly. Now, my guess is if we do this in our county, and if you're thinking about doing it in your county, depending on, varies, of course, from county to county, but I think our best bet would be to use number three. create a resolution initiated by a petition of registered voters equal to 10% of the total number of votes cast in the county for governor at the last gubernatorial election. And I tell you why I think that's the best bet. Our current, the jail that's being built right now, they had to raise, I think it was $8.2 million, so they did a bond. Well, anytime a county does a bond, they have to announce it, and then 30 days for the citizens to protest the bond amendment. Okay, that's part of Tennessee law. It's, they did follow this time. And we decided late in the game, very late in the game, to try to stop the bond. In fact, I want to say maybe 10 days out. And 10 days out, and we needed like 800 people. Granted, we're a small county, so we, you know, I think the number that we had to hit was 800. And so about 10 days out, we started. And, of course, they have to be registered voters, and they're going to verify all the names, make sure they actually live in the county, make sure they're registered, make sure the signature is legal. But in about 10 days' time or less, it may have been less than 10 days, we just missed stopping that bond by a handful of votes, okay? Now, they did throw some of ours out, whether or not they were legitimately thrown out or not. As far as I know, they were. I haven't heard anything otherwise. But, like I say, we started late in the game. I'm pretty confident that when you look at some of the things that you can do with a charter, such as you can require them for any property tax hike to have to, you know, have a vote of the populace. You know, you have to have a majority of the county approve it. Term limits, recall, you know, methods for recalling of elected officials. Just a lot of different things that you can do with a charter. And I think in any county, you know, people are probably going to be up for recall procedures. People are probably going to be up for, hey, you know, you're not going to raise my property taxes unless we have a countywide referendum and everybody in the county decides that we're going to do this. So, and term limits, that's another thing that a lot of people are get fired up about. So I think that in any county you have pretty good odds of finding some things that the people could agree to do, and you could probably get one passed. Now, it's not a overnight process by any means. You know, you probably about a four-year process because you get the charter commission, then you got like 9 months to put the whole charter together. Well, before that, you got to elect the charter commissioners. You put the charter together. The charter's got to be approved. They actually do have to provide you funding while you're doing this. Now, you're not talking a paycheck here. You're talking about money to use for all the information that you have together to create your charter. So it's definitely doable, and it's probably something we need to all look at more because a lot of the things that are going on in our county government, we could actually stop if we had a charter. The stars at night are big and bright deep in the heart of Texas, and conservativenationmedia.com has our very own big and bright Texas star, Michael Berryman. We welcome Michael and his patriotic, no-nonsense brand of Americanism to Sunday afternoons. Michael is as involved in Texas GOP and Tea Party politics as anyone, so you won't want to miss his take on Lone Star State conservative goings-ons direct to you from Fort Worth. It's the Michael Berryman Show, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are waiting for our next guest to join us. Hopefully he will do so soon. Back to the charters. We'll talk about them a little bit more. And let me see if I've got the Lincoln County Charter, if I can find it up. Don't have that one available. But go back here a little bit. The so you've got nine months after the date of the initial meeting once the charter is approved or once the commissioners are elected, and they have to provide up to $50,000, as I said, for the process. Now, those are not salaries. That's the process to get the commission, to get the charter going. So something you might want to look into because, you know, a lot of these things, you know, I know my county, they've got federal grants. They've got federal programs. And every time they do this, every time they sign up for these things, you know, they come with strings. For instance, the visitor center where we do our meetings at. Now, when they first advertised that, it was through a federal program, and it was like, hey, it's not going to cost us anything. Well, that wasn't totally true because we had to pay a certain amount of money to receive the federal funding. I don't recall the amount, but I think they had to actually borrow that. Then they had to, you got lights, you got water, everything else. Anyway, we now have Jan with us, and so we'll. Jan, how you doing tonight?
Hey, good, Dave. I've been trying to connect with you here for about 10 minutes. but I never got through.
Well, this is the first time that I actually saw your number pop up. We were having some problems. I saw the little ball there just spinning and spinning. But glad you got through and glad to have you. Appreciate you coming on.
Glad to be here.
Now, before you came on and I mentioned that you'd be on here, and I kind of said that, you know, I kind of took the liberties of saying that Jan Black is running for County Commission in 7th District Stewart County to return some integrity and physical sanity to the county government. Is that pretty accurate?
100% accurate.
Now, we're going to talk some numbers tonight, and I think our numbers are pretty extreme, but you have probably looking at the material that you've been looking at, I'm sure you've noticed numbers from other counties. And even though we are probably number one in some bad areas, especially when it comes to debt ratio, and we'll talk about that, it's probably safe to say there's no counties out there that are really in good shape. And a lot of people would probably be disgusted to see how irresponsible their county officials are with their money. What do you think?
I think they would. And if they're really interested, they can go out to the comptroller's website and pull the audit that was conducted for the last fiscal year and all the previous fiscal years and review the audits.
Now, the audits will tell them how much was spent and how much was brought in, but it won't. There's a lot of things the audits don't tell them, right?
It doesn't really tell you what the money's spent for, how frugal they are in spending your money. It'll just show that they took in so much revenue and they spent so much. And it'll show you whether there was deficit spending or whether they had a surplus.
Right.
But on that, the audits don't really go into determining whether the expenditure was a valid expenditure or an authorized expenditure.
What are some of the things you found about Stewart County when you were digging through this site?
Well, Stewart County is in debt, way in debt. And we have a debt ratio. It's probably one of the highest in the state of Tennessee. And if you look at the numbers, we are approximately just shy of $39 million in debt.
Good Lord. And we're a county of 13,000? Is that what we got, something like that?
Yeah, we have about 8,800 registered voters in the state, in the county. It's approximately, based on the 2012 audit, I don't have the current number, but at that time when they did the audit, it was over $2,100 per citizen of the county, the debt.
Wow. Now, the property taxes here, I think they're, $225 per hundred?
Actually, they were $225 per hundred, but based on the 2013-14 resolution, they went up to $247 per hundred.
Wow. Okay. And how much of the property tax goes to debt out of every dollar?
Debt service, out of that $2.47, 74 cents of it goes to debt service. It used to be 71 cents in 2012. They've raised it to 74 cents.
Roughly 30-35% all told.
Right at, 30%. It's a little over 30%. And that does not include the wheel tax, which is another $410,000 a year that they take in and apply to debt service.
And we talked about this the other day, and I think you said that we're second only to Montgomery County in terms of the percentage of our property taxes that go towards debt.
As a matter of fact, I just pulled a brand new 2014 number, and we are second only to Montgomery County. Montgomery County has a debt-to-tax ratio of about 32.67%. We're at 30%. And the next one in line is Shelby County, and they're at 17.8%. So we're
wow.
highest in the state.
Now, but remember, I mean, Shelby is a huge county. Montgomery is a sizable county, and we're a small little county, not only
not so much
in land size, but in population.
Montgomery County's tax is $3.14 per hundred, whereas ours is $2.47 per hundred. Now, Shelby, let's see, we got Shelby here. Shelby is actually, they're only 79 cents out of $4.42.
Wow. I think you said they were 17% altogether.
Yeah, they're only a little over 17%.
Now, these numbers, but, okay, that debt does not include the jail debt for the $8.2 million bond that was passed the year before last, because we're not making any payments on that for 5 years, which I think will be, I think it'll come into effect 2017 or 2018. So those numbers don't include the jail, right?
April of 2018, per the paperwork that the county filed. It'll be 2018, and it'll be $569,000 plus some change.
Oh, wow.
And it'll be $500,000 from there on out until the debt's extinguished. And that $8.2 million is going to cost us roughly $13.5 million by the time it's paid off.
It's a 30-year plan, right?
Partially because they deferred the payment on it for 5 years.
Yeah. What are some of the other things that you found looking through there that people need to know and would probably be disgusted to know?
Well, there's all kinds of information in the audit. There's all kinds of information out on the website. But you have to really go through and look at the numbers. Like right now, if for debt service, we're spending somewhere in a neighborhood of $2,379,564 just for debt service. Again, that does not include the debt service for the jail, because that will be another $500,000 per year on top of that $2.3 million. So that'll push us over or right close to $3 million per year.
Good Lord.
There is no other source of revenue for the county except to increase property taxes. Unless they, again, raise the wheel tax.
It's at $59 right now is the wheel tax. We have a lot of people here. We have a lot of renters. And, of course, they don't pay property tax. The biggest employer in the county is the county government. Now, is that because of the number of teachers, or is that without the teachers, is it still the biggest employer in the county?
Well, I believe the county itself has a – well, I had that number. Hold on a second. Let's see if I can pull that from the Well, that would probably include the school system, because I think there's 141. Don't hold me to that, but I like 141 or 142 employees of the county. That does not include the teachers and the staff at the school system. So those are in addition to that. But that is in the audit itself. It breaks that down. And one of the ironic things is that the county has been written up 3 years in a row that I know of, perhaps even further, for audit findings. And the school has been written up with audit findings, but nobody has done anything in the county to correct it. Last year, the county, per the audit, was $669,000 in debt. They had a shortfall of that much money. And the county had to bail them out, basically. And again, their budget this year is short, and if you look at the resolutions that the county passed providing additional funding out of the general revenue of the county to the school, it's approximately $700,000 again this year.
Good Lord. And now that's on, is that on top of or in a, the buses? You mentioned the buses the other day when we were talking that there was money set aside for buses from the county.
That included that. That $700,000 would include the 200, I believe it's 270, give or take a few dollars, $70,000 for three buses.
Yeah, and then there was money that was paid to the school from, what is it, TVA, or is it Land Between the Lakes that pays a certain amount, goes to the school, that the school is supposed to pass on to the county government, but they basically allowed them to keep it this year?
Well, there was $30,000 that the school was supposed to pay to the county, and there was another $60,000 or $70,000, again, money that I think there was arrearage there, but you can't tell because the books aren't open. just like everything else in the county, it's closed. Unless you're the person doing actually looking at where the expenditures are and did an audit of the books, you can't tell where the money's flowing to and from. But they owe the county money, and the county kind of waived it for this year so they wouldn't have to pay it. So basically another gift of approximately $700,000 in total.
Good Lord. Now, before you came on, I talked a little bit about the petition. I talked about the petition and with the basically the violation of the open meeting laws, and that the state attorney general had, or excuse me, the state, the comptroller of the treasury had contacted the chairman of the Stewart County Budget Committee, Mark Dortch, and basically laying out that, hey, you know, you're in violation of the open meeting laws, and gave the dates and basically laid out, hey, here's the way it's supposed to be done. And, of course, we've got a petition to have them removed. And I imagine a lot of people weren't aware that there were things in the code that where you could petition to have your county government ousted for not upholding the law.
Yeah, there's ouster provisions in the Tennessee state statute to remove individuals from office. Any county, city, state official can be removed under the ouster provisions. And basically violating the laws of the state of Tennessee is justification for ouster. And Stewart County in the past has violated numerous open meeting laws by not conducting meetings in the open. I've gone to several of their commission meetings. When they passed the budget for 2013-14, it was a seven-minute meeting, which indicated to me that they had already discussed and deliberated the issues in the budget prior to coming to that meeting. Anyone with any common sense could only draw that conclusion.
Right.
So I went in and requested copies of the minutes of the Budget and Finance Committee meetings. And at the Budget and Finance Committee meetings, which were not announced to the public in accordance with the law, I found that there were some discussions, but not sufficient discussions to justify approving a $16 million budget for the school.
Yeah, yeah.
When the school has proven in the past that they cannot handle the budget, they are not equipped to handle the budget. So
wow.
There's a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes. The commissioners and the mayor have conducted meetings in secret, which is in violation of the statute. And the other thing that they've done is to try to hide the budget from the citizens of the county, is every year before they can approve a budget, 10 days prior to, they have to post it in the local newspaper. Mandatory.
Yeah.
It is statutorily required that they publish it. Stewart County
right.
did not publish it. And the irony is the Tennessee University County Technical Assistance Service sent a letter. They send out letters to the mayor and the commissioners advising them of this. So they can't say they didn't know about it. They know. They know the open meeting laws because they're reminded of them, and
yep.
they choose not to comply with the law. And
that's like
in and of itself is justification for removal from office under the ouster provisions.
Little D.C. and Tennessee.
Yes.
One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Be very glad you did. We're going to take a very short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on The Michael Behrman Show. Right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Jan Black. He's running for County Commission in the 7th District, Stewart County. Jan, you've laid out a lot of it. Well, you've only scratched the surface on the dirt, but I would probably have to devote an hour, and I can't do that tonight. But let's talk a little bit about your campaign. How's that looking for you?
It's looking good. Most of the folks that I've gone out and talked to are ready for change in Stewart County. And a real change, not an Obama change, but real change.
None of that hope and change.
There's some accountability and some integrity in office.
Yeah. Now, do you find and I don't know if you know how many of the people you talk to are originally from here versus transplants, and do you see any difference in their perspectives?
No, not really. I've talked to a lot of folks that are from here, they are just as disenchanted and feel just as disenfranchised with the local government as those folks that have moved here from the outside. And in some instances, they feel more disenfranchised because some of the people in these offices are their relatives.
Yeah, they're disappointed.
And they're disappointed, yes.
Yeah. You know, it's bad when things happen. It's worse when family does it to you.
Yep. And I've spoken to some of the folks that are relatives of some of the current district commissioners, and they're not happy with their performance. And they're happy that somebody is running against them, and maybe we can make some change in Stewart County. There are several of the commissioners that two in the district that I'm running against. One of them never shows up to meetings. I shouldn't say never. Maybe one out of every three meetings he attends. And that in and of itself is a violation of the law. The statute requires that if you run for a county commission or a county elected office, you must attend meetings. And the other individual that I'm running against is Mark Dortch, and he's the one that holds the budget and finance meetings in secret. And there's a lot of the meetings that go on in this county that are never announced to the public. And I look at that as a blatant violation of the law and a blatant violation of their trust to their constituents. They're supposed to have open meetings that are open and above board. They're supposed to inform their constituents of what's going on and give them an opportunity for input. And the way it's operating in this county right now, there's no opportunity for input.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we hope to get you in there and, you know, need you and at least a half a dozen more like you in there. But you know enough to stir the pot in there by yourself. And so we look forward to the campaign season. It's going to get interesting, especially with this petition. And I think the talk of a charter, I think we'll get some traction with that. And we'll be talking about some of that this week in our meeting. So good luck to you. Thanks for coming on and hope to have you back.
Thank you, Dave.
Take care. We'll see you later.
All right.
Our next guest is Jody Harden. She is SEC candidate for the 25th District. How are you doing tonight, Jody?
Good, Dave. How are you?
Doing good. Appreciate you coming on.
No, thank you. I really appreciate you having me. I really do.
Well, tell everybody else a little bit about you. Now, I read your bio earlier, but it probably sounds better coming from you, so I'll turn it over to you here for a couple minutes.
Well, I've been in Middle Tennessee for almost 15 years now. I found myself more than knee-deep in politics when Barack Obama was running his campaign, his first campaign, and I didn't know what to do, Dave. I just knew that I wanted to do something, and so I helped a friend of mine to gain a Republican seat here in Tennessee in the state Senate, and since then, I just felt like I needed to keep serving. So I have two awesome kids, elementary age children, and I want to keep serving. I feel like I'm supposed to be serving the people of Tennessee. So I hope people will consider giving me their vote on August 7th.
Now that's for the SEC in the 25th district, and that's Dixon County and what other counties?
Well, it serves the entire 25th Senate District, so it's Dixon, Hickman, Humphreys, Robertson, and Cheatham County.
Okay. And for, you know, there's a chance that we might have a few listeners out there that don't really understand the SEC or what it does and the importance of having conservatives in the SEC. Can you fill the blanks in on that a little bit?
Well, I'll do my best. What I see is this is an opportunity to become a vote not only on the Republican Party budget statewide, but you also have the opportunity to help vet and recruit Republican candidates for office. So there's a few things I think that can be helpful as a conservative to serve on the state executive committee.
Okay.
There are 66 members. There's a, just to fill you in on kind of the numbers, there's a male and a female. I'm just talking about Republican because that's the, you know, that's the spot I'm running for. There are 66 members. There's a male and a female from every Senate district elected. So you have a vote, from what I understand, you have a vote on the party budget, and there are other things. You write policies and whatnot for the local offices. And so the platform, I guess, in itself, you are helpful to write what we stand for as Republicans because you're involved in helping to write those policies for the party.
Well, what are some of the policies that you'd like to see enacted?
Well, I can't think of any new ones. I'd like to, you know, it would just be me in one vote. Now, I understand that because there'd be all these other votes. But I would love to see stronger, if we could, stronger language on right to life. Maybe, you know, there's so much of the Republican platform that I just love. I would just say, you know, let's keep it strong and keep recruiting people who align with those values. Keep supporting candidates who really align with the values that are already in the platform. So I don't know that I want to go in and, you know, change the platform so much because I think there's a lot of great things in the platform. Most of it, I would say almost all of it is really good. The recruiting part would be the part that I would find most exciting, strengthening the base, you know, and the party apparatus for conservative candidates. That's where I would see the need for my service.
Now, not talking personalities here, but currently, regardless of who the SEC chair is in the state, that person has a lot of power. Do you think that maybe that power needs to be balanced out a little bit to where the chairman doesn't need to have the authority? Forgive you for an example. He's the final word. He or she is the final word on whether or not somebody is considered a bona fide Republican and can run for an office. Now, obviously, I would think that most of them take into consideration the county chair's thoughts when there's a challenge to somebody who's running. But the state chair has a lot of power. Do you think that maybe that should be curtailed a little bit and the actual committee play a little bigger role maybe?
You know, I really do think it should be leveled out a little better. I have heard, I think you may be referencing some of the issues that I've heard that's come up with people that are trying that had tried to run. I think that may be what you're talking about. If it is, yes,
yeah.
I do. I do think the responsibility should be able to be leveled out. Currently, I think you're right. Currently, the chairman is the final word, and I don't know how much of that the state executive committee itself is able to change anyway. So until I've known people that have served for years on the state executive committee, you don't really fully understand your responsibility and what you can and cannot be there for or against until you get assigned to these subcommittees and then serve on the subcommittees. And then I think you're better educated by that. Because I don't know if you've read the Republican platform, but I believe it's Article 2 that created the State Executive Committee, and it is really, it's vague. There's so much of it that is vague. And, you know, I'm going off of what I've read and saying it's vague. Now, the people that I know that have served, they felt the same way. So,
right.
So a lot of it may just be get there and find out what can and cannot be done.
Yeah, yeah. America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com is going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedoms away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. The phone number is 718-305-7176. I'm talking with Jody Harden. She's an SEC candidate for the 25th Senatorial District. And we were talking about the amount of power that the SEC chairman has, and you mentioned the bylaws, and you'll know more about what you might want to change were you to get in there. But let me ask you this. Was it just basically your desire to serve on the SEC that's why you're running?
Well,
or was there something
I
specific that kind of guided you to that?
Well, I do want to serve. But like I said, I feel like I've already been serving in a certain capacity for the last 3.5 years. But another thing is, I think there's a need for more conservative folks to serve on the state executive committee. That's my feeling, and that's why I put in papers to run. If I can be helpful, because one of the jobs is to represent the state party in the Senate district. That is your job. You represent the Republican Party in the entire Senate district that you run in. So if you represent the entire, you know, the state party in your district, you also are able to meet and help to recruit. What I think would be helpful would be more conservative candidates, all the while supporting the good folks we already have in office. Is that your question okay, Dave?
Yeah, I got you. I didn't know if you had like a laundry list of things that you wanted to do when you got to the SEC. I know I can think of a few, but you know, I may not be as familiar with the bylaws as you are, and I definitely think that the chairman has a little too much authority. And let me ask you this: do you think there should be maybe a little more authority or power at the county level? Have the county chairs, I mean, what about the concept of county chairs being part of the SEC, of voting members? Is that something you would be agreeable to?
Well, I'll just say from what I understand, I think our county chair is running for the male spot right here in Dixon County. So,
right, but I mean county chairs in general, do you think they should have maybe a little more influence? I mean, maybe you expand the SEC, and obviously this is not something you could do just because you get elected to the SEC, but having the county chairs have more of a say in what goes on in the party across the state.
I think the county chairs are the closest to home, and if that were a possibility, I think it would be a good idea, because it's just, you know, the state representative offices, from what I understand, were set up to be closer to the people. Clearly, your county chairs are going to know county to county. Every county is going to be very different and have different feels and wants and needs because of, you know, they're being very different types of areas, you know. So I do think that if there were an opportunity for county chairs to have more of a play, I think that would be a good idea, because they're closer to their people than I guess you would be in an entire Senate district.
Yeah. Okay. All right, hey, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back in just a minute on Inside Tennessee.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
I'm making beef sliders for my friend Sandy. Nana taught me to always pull meat off the grill early, so it's extra juicy.
Use a food thermometer to ensure ground beef is 160 degrees, or you could make people really sick. Sandy didn't think twice about the slider she ate until yoga class, when a nasty case of food poisoning turned her downward-facing dog into upward-moving lunch. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov and learn the steps Maria unwittingly leaves out. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Concerted Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Jody Harden from the 25th Senatorial District. She's running for the SEC. And, Jody, we got about 10 minutes, and I want to just turn it over to you, and you can tell whatever reasons that you are running for SEC that you haven't covered and other things that you would like to accomplish. Ready, set, go.
I've decided to run because I want to further serve the people of the state of Tennessee, and one of the ways I can do that is to run for some office. I think we're all charged to try to get hold of our state and our nation. I think sovereignty is a huge deal. If we can vet and get folks elected to ensure that the federal government doesn't overreach and go into the state's rights, I think then the folks on the SEC that serve should be more open to conservative candidates. And I would love to represent children.
So maybe an SEC resolution, you know, recognizing state sovereignty? Is that something that you'd be on board with?
That would be fantastic. I think state sovereignty is one of the major issues we're having right now. I don't know if everyone knows this, but we are over our head in debt with the federal government. And most of that money comes from us in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
And so we have to give them our money and then beg for it back. And by following all of their rules, it just doesn't make sense to me. So if I can, you know, play a part in all kinds of things, right to life, state rights, you know, keeping the federal government minding their business, they just should be protecting us with the military, you know.
On the
I
border.
Just don't understand.
We need a DMZ.
If they could just wrap their minds around, okay, I think probably the major problem federal level is that they get up there and everything they live in this bubble. They're no longer connected to the people. And I'm not saying they're all like that, because there are certainly some awesome people serving, and I'm glad they're there. But
right.
On the other hand, I think other people get up there and they lose their moral compass. And
yeah.
And once that happens, states' rights are out the window half the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
right.
That's one of my big deals. And then I'm a big right-to-lifer. So I would love to make sure and ensure that the folks that already have their seats keep their seats that are fighting for the right for unborn children to live.
Well, you know, do you think – I agree with you 100% on the life issue. Now, let me ask you this. At the federal level, it seems to me like the GOP is just chomping at the bit to go ahead and do the amnesty thing. I mean, I'm surprised they haven't already done it, and I'm going to be shocked if they don't do it. And that's bad for our country. That's basically you're giving up your sovereignty. You're giving away your country. And that's what amnesty is. It's a giveaway of our country. And
yeah,
I would like to see our state stand up on that issue. And, you know, I'd like to see maybe a state resolution of, hey, you know, if the federal government's not going to uphold its end of the bargain and secure our borders, and if they're just going to, with a wave of a wand or an executive order, say, okay, these people are now here legally, well, you know, we're not going to suck up the cost of that. We're not going to accept them in Tennessee. You go to D.C. D.C. said yes. Go to D.C. Tennessee didn't say we want you. And I'd like to see the GOP in Tennessee come down hard on that issue. I don't have any confidence. And as you know, and I'm, you know, you're not responsible for this, but I have absolutely no confidence in our governor on this issue or anything else, quite honestly. But I think most of the people in Tennessee will be disgusted and be outraged when the amnesty comes. And the thing is, if they come to Tennessee, and we already have a problem with refugees, we do the refugee resettlement, and we have all these people coming here, and we end up footing the bill. We foot the bill through federal taxes, and then our state sucks up the cost as well. And I'd like to see the state party take a strong stand against that.
Well, I think that's very noble I think that Tennessee should lead the way and on that issue specifically. I don't know that that I'd say that Tennessee's not going to fight back on that. I really would hope, my hope would be that Tennessee would be that state to lead the way and say, look, you guys can make breaking the law okay, but Tennessee's not going to jump on board with you. We are a state. You're not going to come in and force us to help people break the law. That's my hope. That's what I hope to see with the amnesty issue in Tennessee. Yeah. Now, at the federal level, my goodness. And hey, let me just say this. All politics, and I know this is cliche, but I think maybe even Reagan said this, that all politics are local politics. If you don't get hold of your local elections, and folks, if you are fed up with your school board members or your commissioners or whatever the issues are in your county, and you're not doing anything about it but complaining, you're not helping. What we need is people to say, okay, I don't agree with the way so-and-so's doing this, and then either run yourself, try to do something yourself, or get somebody whose values and whose beliefs align with what you want to see in your city, county, and state. And that's where I think it all starts. I don't think we're going to take it back from
D.C. No, you're right. We won't. We got to take it from our counties and from our state. And so many of the things that come out of D.C. are, you know, they're administered at the county level, and or they're, you know, federal grants to go directly to your county. And, you know, our commissioners sign up for these things because they see it as free money, which it's not. So you're right. We definitely, all races are important, school board, county commissioner, obviously, you know, state executive committee, state rep, state senator. Now, how many people are running against you? How many people are you competing with for this in this race? Hello?
I just have one opponent.
Oh, okay. Who's
Dave?
That?
Oh,
you're
I'm
kind
sorry.
Of fading in and out.
I'm sorry. It's Marianne Parks out of Robertson County.
Okay. And so have you been to all the counties in the district already?
I have, but I wish I had more time to do that. I really do. I need to spend a lot more time, and I will spend a lot more time in Cheatham. As you know, when the redistricting happened, we lost, as the 25th Senate District, we lost Lawrence, Lewis, and Giles County. It was very sad to lose those counties. You know, we made a lot of friends in those counties and just a lot of great salt-of-the-earth people. I'm not kidding you. And then we gained Robertson and Cheatham. So it's exciting, you know, to have these two new counties.
Right. You're kind of fading out. I don't know if it's on your end or my end. Can
you
hear me?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir,
okay,
I can hear
you. Okay, I got you. Okay, have you got any events coming up? We're running out of time here. I just want to know if you had any events coming up.
Well, I'd love to see everybody at the Pegram, that's Cheatham County. I'd love to see everybody at the 4th of July parade. Of course, I will be there. Dave, if you don't mind, I'd like to leave my cell phone number with your listeners. If they want to get involved in my campaign, and I'd love to have their help, it's area code 615-779-8433. And my campaign director is Rhoda Shearer, Scherer. Her cell phone number is 615-582-580. And I have a fundraiser coming up in Dixon County. It'll be the middle of June, but we haven't settled on a final date. But if anybody's interested, please give us a call. Give me a call on my cell phone. I'll be glad to talk to you. And you can also friend me on Facebook. I'd love to get to know you that way, and you can get to know a lot about me just by checking me out there. Or call me if you want to get to know where I stand on things and what I stand for.
Well, and now do you have a website?
You know, I haven't set up a website because for whatever reason, and I hope this changes, The state executive committee has not has apparently not drawn in enough interest. So
yeah,
I just
We are completely out of time. Thank you for coming on. Good luck, and glad to have you, and look to have you back.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. I'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. God bless. Take care.
You
join
too,
us next
sir.
Week, next week on Inside Tennessee. Have a good one.
Thank you.